Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by DVT. I'm pleased to welcome Carl Fisher now to the podcast. Carl is MD of DVT's coastal region. He's also the company's chief marketing officer and executive head of AI and data. Carl, those are a lot of responsibilities you have there. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Duncan. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's great.
Pleasure. Great to have you on the show. Now, DVT, you guys have been around for about 20 or 21 years now. You've got over 100 employees around the country, and you even have an office in London as well. Tell me a bit about the company, its origins, and what it does, and who its clients are.
Well, it's a great South African story, actually. So, yeah, the company's been around 21 years. Originated in Cape Town, now with offices Cape Town, Johannesburg, Pretoria, Durban, and London. So it's one of those best-kept secrets in terms of IT companies within the country. Dealing with all the major enterprise organizations during that time, originally based on the founders writing a book about Visual Basic, which is where DVT comes from, by the way, Dynamic Visual Technologies.
Oh.
They broke the book. They then started working with their customers to go, well, the contents of the book tells you about Visual Basic. Let's help you actually utilize that in your business to build systems and then get the value out of that. As a company now, it's obviously grown and not 100 employees, but close on 600 now, actually, in terms of all the people that are there. And the work that we do is across the entire application development chain. So everything from the front end of what can the technology do, how might you use that, what are the opportunities for your business, to what are the best choices for the business in terms of using that technology, and then actually building that out for them, be that in mobile applications, web applications, or in the data space, and implementing things like AI alongside that. We also help organizations in terms of the digital transformation, and that means helping them with agile transformation as well. So how do you adopt agile? How do you implement frameworks like Scrum? How do you then get people in your organization understanding the new responsibilities when you start taking a product-oriented approach? And how can that benefit your business in terms of a faster response to the market, delighting your customers by responding to the things that are of most value to them and the things that they really want from you? So, yeah, it's an exciting place to be after 21 years, now looking at the global markets and making inroads there as well. So it's great.
Visual Basic is where you started, though. Is Visual Basic still a big thing?
It's out there in different formats. Yeah, it's a great thing when customers are on something incredibly old that we can take them in somewhere new and go, there's still bb.net and we can get you there and we can get you into the cloud and get you onto the current versions and current platforms. And that's part of the thing that we see that makes it interesting for the folks that work for us is there's a wide range of tech that's out there at different stages of maturity and we get the chance to take people to where it's at now.
Great stuff. So who are your clients primarily? Is it corporate South Africa? Do you work in smaller enterprises as well? And are there particular industries that you focus on?
Duncan, it's primarily probably the medium and larger enterprises that we're there with. And that's typically because the nature of the projects that we work on are done internally within those organizations, which is why a lot of the people that might be listening to the podcast will go, DVT, never heard of you, other than as a result on a bad search that I didn't expect to see. Yeah? So the smaller folks that come along are probably your entrepreneurs and folks in the fintech space. And we've got a long history with financial services. So, You know, the big insurers within South Africa, all the big banks and even the central bank as well has been a customer in the past.
Yeah. Have you guys been affected by COVID, if you have been affected?
Well, yes. So in the way that it is basically affecting everybody, it's done a transformation for us really in terms of the work from home, work from anywhere, which has meant really good things for our company in one way, not from the point of view of the risk and threat to folks that are out there, but in terms of breaking down barriers for our organization. In the past, we were very regionally focused. We took all that out and went anytime now that we are talking to customers, the entire resource pool of our team members in terms of the smart people that work for us are now available to work for anybody on any project anywhere. And that's now supported our whole international move as well in terms of providing South African-based operational services to international customers. And that's already taking hold in the UK, in Europe, and in the US as well.
Interesting. How long have you been in the UK for?
Well, all of probably 2 years now in two formats. We originally started an investigation into it, and we then launched our quality assurance business out there as the first step. The real reason for that being giving the market a particular focus and a particular message. So our partner company or our sister company within the technologies group is one called Inspired Testing, and all of our QA services are housed within that. So they've been out there now for about 2 years. And ourselves, we've just appointed our managing director, Jason Bramston, across there to represent DVT and DVT services now as well. So Jason's been up and running for about 6 months now, I think.
Before we move on to the meat of today's discussion, I was quite keen to get your views on the skills situation in South Africa. I know there's been a bit of a ramping up of immigration by skilled South Africans in the last few years. I personally know quite a few people in the software development market who've left for Europe and Australia. How much of a challenge is this for the sector in retaining skills, and how has it affected DVT, and what are you guys able to do about it to try and counter this threat?
Gee, Duncan, no easy questions today. Oh, come on, give me a couple of softballs to field here. I think that's going to be a challenge across the globe, right? The shortage in terms of the tech space is something that everybody feels. The really good folks in terms of development, the folks with experience, the folks that can solve those really tough, challenging problems, they're hard to find, but they're growing. And the opportunity in the tech space is something that's obviously growing as well. So there's a need for people in that space. In part, I guess one of the things that we can look at COVID as a positive too is that it's stopped physically immigration for a period of time.
Right.
And during that time, with the opening of opportunities to folks to work from anywhere, I think people have realized I don't necessarily need to live the or leave, sorry, the most beautiful country in the world, being South Africa, to work on international projects. They can actually work on it from here. And the fact that we are now getting opportunities to work on those projects means they don't have to leave a South African organization in order to get that exposure either. So in a way, this breakdown in the barriers of entry into the global market are going to help in part in terms of the opportunity to retain really good skill within South Africa and grow that skill because of new opportunities coming along. At the same time, the demand for it is such that in the developer community and in folks that are in the technology space that gain skill in this, they're going to be in demand.
Yes.
So you've got to counter that with ensuring that you have the right culture, the right opportunities, and that you look after the people in the right way, that they go, I have what I'm looking for here in the way of a home where I can grow my career, grow my skills, be challenged, learn, and be part of an organization that really appreciates me. So I think that's going to be the best defense for anybody, and that's not going to be peculiar to a South African organization. That's going to count no matter where you are, which will also mean that what we'll have opportunity to look at folks that are outside of South Africa. I think
Yes.
the first thing, though, is going to be that responsibility to SA Inc. Let's find opportunity and grow opportunity for South Africans. We've got enough of a problem in unemployment that there is certainly a vector here where we can grow jobs and gain an opportunity to do good within our communities. And we're already seeing that in some of our own customers that are going, in the past, they would have gone, I have projects that I need to do, and we've outsourced those to India or anywhere else. And they're now coming back from that going, I see how I can impact and benefit South Africa by bringing some of those opportunities back to local companies. And that's something that I think we've all probably got to focus on and kind of go, well, how can we bring a positive impact to South Africa?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I've realized it myself actually in the last few months during this lockdown, with very, very few face-to-face meetings. I think I've had maybe six meetings face-to-face in the last 6 months, with the rest done via Teams or Zoom or whatever platform it happens to be. And it's kind of made me realize, and I think it's made a lot of other people realize, and I think this may be particularly acutely realized in the software development space, is that you don't actually have to be in a big city to do this work. You can literally be anywhere, provided you've got a good internet connection. If you've got a good fiber connection, you can live on the Garden Route or the North Coast of KZN or a small town in the Karoo. It doesn't actually matter where you are, provided you can connect. Do you think there's going to be a big shift in people's thinking about where they are physically, and what impact do you think that's going to have on the software development market?
There already is, and folks are realizing that, from a a lifestyle point of view, they can pick where they want to be based in order to do this type of work, which is fantastic. You know, quality of life and that experience is a big part of who you are and what you do. It shouldn't be defined by having to get up in the morning, do 2.5 hours of traffic to get into an office where you're sitting and being monitored because you're manufacturing widgets. We don't build widgets. Everybody out there that still wants people to sit in the office, please remember that. Don't build widgets. You hire smart people to do smart things.
Yeah.
And well, everyone knows the quote from good old Steve Jobs in terms of that stuff. Mm. But the reality that people have now experienced points out that this works. Working remotely actually works. You've been pushed into it. You've been forced to do it. But it delivers. Utilization in terms of team members is up. Productivity is up. It's going to come with challenges, no doubt. Having everybody work from home is great for a while when they go, oh, we've been all been asking for this. But at a point in time, you actually do miss people.
Yes.
And certain activities, creative activities where you actually need that feedback between people, you need that live interaction, there'll still be place for that. But the new dynamic for us is certainly what we're experiencing now, which is it's possible. It works, and you can trust people to be responsible in this type of work. It's very clear when work is being delivered, and that's probably the best metric of all. It's, did you work between 8 and 5? No, I didn't. But you got so much done. Yeah, well, because I prefer to work between 9 in the evening and then 8 in the morning, and then I go walk my dogs. Yeah,
which is what a lot of software.
It's all possible.
Which is what a lot of developers like to do, right? They like to work in the middle of the night when the rest of us are sleeping.
Exactly. And my little story there is related to them, because I'm certainly not one of those people. I'm not smart enough to be a developer, that's for sure. But I'm trying really hard, Duncan, to figure out how I'm going to fool my CEO into every call that I take will be seated on my surfboard. So all I need is that mobile connection. I need the waterproof laptop. And I need those virtual backgrounds that's just going to hide out that next set that's arriving. And I'll just blame it on Comslink dropout every time.
Well, you mentioned the need for people to meet face to face and that human interaction. But I do wonder, and it's something I have thought about a lot. You know, you look at the technologies like mixed reality from Microsoft. We're going a long way. Apple's investing a lot of companies are investing a lot of money in augmented reality devices. In 10 years, it's quite feasible that we'd be able to have a social interaction as if those people are in the room with us. I wonder if that would make it sufficiently human as an interaction to allow us to satisfy that need, that human craving for interactivity and contact, or whether. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that we could get to the point where the technology actually allows that, is sufficiently real and personal that we don't actually have to be physically together to be together?
I think we've all learned the lesson that to bet against the capability of the technology is a really bad idea. So ultimately, if there is the market for it and the creative people can come up with it, would they be able to create something that is as good as being there almost? Yeah, it probably will be able to, but that I think that social creature nature and the fact that you're in a space with somebody and close to them, that it's always going to be reality versus virtual reality in one way or another.
Yeah.
I think the communication side can improve and you'll gain a lot from the tech being able to show you more. So my physical presence in a room will demonstrate a lot through body language and how I respond to what you're saying when you're actually saying it.
Yes.
Having that feedback in terms of a virtual type environment will go a long way towards closing some of the gap.
Yeah.
But people are still that unique thing that we have. They are still the answer to problems. They are still the thing that is the most amazing bit that we ever will put on this earth. Why? Because we're able to do these amazing things. We're able to do these amazing things together.
Mm-hmm.
And the tech is just an example of that. So will we create something fantastic? That, yes. But out of all that, I guess I hope that people never devalue that personal connection, that personal interaction, which pretty much defines who we are.
Yeah. Fascinating discussion. We could actually carry on talking about this all afternoon, but I guess we are going a little bit off topic, Carl. Although our on-topic discussion today, people may think, is our off-topic discussion because we're going to be talking
We've got the
about.
whole of lockdown, Duncan. We've got the whole of lockdown. This can go on for a while.
True, true. Although we're going to be talking about Donald Trump next, so I'm not sure how long we want it to go on for. But we are
Well,
going
until the 20th of January. 20th of January, please. That's got to be the absolute deadline on this thing. That's it. Done.
At midday on the 20th of January, East Coast time, indeed. But yes, we are actually going to be talking about Donald Trump for much of the rest of this podcast. That, Carl, is because you believe there are important lessons that can be learned from the Trump campaign, particularly the 2016 campaign, perhaps not quite as much as the 2020 campaign.
Oh, it's a world of learning, Duncan. There's so much that we can gain from President Trump and his campaign. Oh, yes, let's go there. Let's go there.
Let's go there. Have you got your MAGA hat? Are you gonna are you got have you got one to put on?
Well, every time I get one, I burn it. That might tell you something about how you should read this little session.
All right, there we go. Okay, so no MAGA hats. Okay, right. Let's dive into it and let's explain to the viewers and listeners to this podcast why we're about to talk about Donald Trump in the context of software development and digital transformation. So, Colt, what can we learn from Donald Trump's campaign?
Well, let's kind of just connect that first so that folks know. So digital business, the adoption of things in social, mobile, analytics, and cloud. Yeah, so what on earth has that got to do with Donald? Well, that maybe the answer to that lies outside of tech. So first of all, if you're struggling to kind of do that digital transformation, bring your business into the digital age, do all those things, there's definitely a couple of things you can pick up from Donald for sure. And start off with, if it doesn't work, blame the guy that was there before. That's what you do. There you go. So lesson number one, blame the guy that was there before. Pandemic response, guy before. Yeah, he left the cupboards bare. It's his fault. So remember that part. Yeah.
Right. That sounds
Then,
like what every politician does, right? Blame someone
well,
else.
Some do it better than others, right? And we have some exemplary examples from the US in terms of that. It's just amazing. Along with that, you kind of see all the other little tactics that you really should have in your bag of tricks as a CEO, CIO, CXO, whichever C you are. If you're being criticized, it's really simple. Just call it fake news. It's not real.
And if you lose the
That's
election, blame cheating. But
well, then you just call it into question and go, no, we're not having an election.
Didn't happen. All right, Carl, but seriously, what digital transformation, it's top of mind for South African businesses, particularly given what happened with COVID and the lockdown, et cetera. I think it's a top of mind in boardrooms at the moment. And before, I think CIOs were saying, well, we really need to do this, guys. And the CEO was maybe going, well, this is going to cost a lot of money. Do we really have to do it? Now the CEO is going to the CIO and saying, what's taking us so long to get this project finished? So let's break this down. What did the Trump campaign do that we can learn in approaching digital transformation? I know you want to approach this from the viewpoint of analytics, mobile, social media, that sort of thing. So let's go through those in order. Analytics.
Great.
Do you want to break that down for us?
Analytics. So if you did anything in terms of looking back to 2016 and go, what on earth happened here? It's a prime example of how analytics were used to actually do some, well, let's call it an absolute amazing thing. Get somebody elected to the most powerful office in the world that it should never have happened. But what did they do? What did they do incredibly smartly? And that was to be able to use analytics to understand where they would have influence, where they should apply the activity, where they should go, who they should target, how they should target them, when they should target them. And if anyone's sitting there going, gee, that sounds like how I should be approaching my customers, not a bad idea. That's the whole thing behind analytics these days, is it's being able to make better business decisions based on visibility to the data that you have and understanding the information that's contained within that data. The extension on that, though, is it was probably a major surprise at that point in time in 2016 in that campaign to go, analytics could be that influential in terms of determining a major outcome like that. We're 4 years later, and analytics is a story that all organizations have now heard and understand that it has power, it has something that they should be tapping into. But there's more consideration around that now. There's a lot more that folks need to be looking at to kind of go, well, if I have that power and that capability, I also need to be giving that really conscious thought as to what I do with that. Because you might well be able to get to a point of micro-targeting. So now your campaigns in terms of how you communicate out to customers is down to the one-to-one level. No more big segments, LSM groups and others, and hoping that you'll hit a target. In combination with social media, you now have the opportunity to go, well, I can target particular people that meet a particular demographic, a particular capability in a particular area, so that I'm almost guaranteed that this is the right person for me to put my message in front of. Along with that now comes the responsibility of going, am I being fair in terms of that message? Am I influencing or am I informing? And those are fundamentally different things. To influence somebody is to almost make up their mind for them.
Mm-hmm.
To inform somebody is to present an opportunity for them to consider an offer and then make a decision on that. With behavioral analytics and the capabilities that lie behind the science based on the data, it's incredibly easy to step over that line, incredibly easy. And that's a real danger that organizations now need to be conscious of, because if you look beyond that and go, the 2016 election, major win for Trump, major kudos to an organization like Cambridge Analytica for what they did with the data. Cambridge Analytica doesn't exist anymore. Why? Because of the response to unethical practices by the organization that saw customers leave them completely. And there's a learning in that for organizations that go down this road. The technology is the technology, and there's a lot that you can do with it. But you now need to couch that in an ethical framework. You now need to couch that in conscious leadership around the use of this and determining the right things to do with the technology capability. And that's something that in the past we probably haven't done enough of. And it's really something, well, one of the things I'm really passionate about, apart from the surfing thing and getting out of work during the day, the other part of that is this, is that the leadership within organizations these days, it's one thing for organizations like DBT and others to be able to bring technology capability and opportunity to you. You're responsible and you're accountable, though, for the decisions that are made beyond that. And that winds up being something that both the tech providers and consultants and those businesses now need to take into the decision process to go make the right decisions so that when the communities that you serve and the organizations that you participate with are exposed to what you've decided to do, there's no negative feedback. There's nobody coming back and going, wow, you shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the acceleration of the response through social media and organization and other bits and pieces that now lie there within the public domain means that you could make a decision for a business purposes or business purpose that you look at and go, wow, that's going to really drive my sales. I'm going to convince all these people that they have to buy my widget. And then all the people find out how you were influencing to buy the widget when you shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do they stop buying your widgets, but very likely all of your customers disappear and all the support that you have disappeared. And the people that work in your organization suddenly go, it's not the type of organization I want to be a part of. And the business disappears, which is, again, why these become such important things that organizations pay attention to alongside the tech capability, because that becomes such a critical element that we haven't considered in the past. Well, perhaps we have, but not to the degree we need to now with the speed and capability that is in front of us. Mm-hmm. So that is probably the bit that comes along from the Trump campaign. It's great. It wasn't there. It was used. It did something. People are now aware of it. But you now also know the consequences of using that technology. So you need to be responsible for that and be accountable for that too.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about the need for doing things ethically. I think many companies look at the Protection of Personal Information Act, which is coming into full effect in about 7 months or so, the GDPR regulations out of Europe, and they say, well, we need to comply with consumer data privacy regulations. And I think what many companies do is they say, well, okay, we've read Papier, we've complied with the requirements of this, we're ready to go. And they don't think beyond that in terms of ethical leadership. They think, well, we've checked the boxes. We are compliant with the Poppy Act. Let's carry on. But there's much more to it than that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, legislation is there at the end of the day to kind of go, here's some of the framework against which you can judge some of your basic practices.
Right.
It doesn't go towards the moral character and the moral direction that you drive an organization in. And that represents both the organization and the people that are part of that organization. Mm. So it's definitely not just about legislation. You can't legislate everything. And that's part of the challenge you see for the likes of Facebook, Instagram, and others these days in terms of that trade-off between freedom of speech versus what should actually be disseminated, what should be allowed on those channels because of the disinformation factor that it represents. There's so much more now with our interconnectedness and the speed at which this stuff travels.
Mm.
That the legislation is one tool that kind of goes, well, here's what people are generally thinking. And at the end of the day, that kind of gives you the black and white of what you must do at the very least. Beyond that is all the thinking around it that goes, we need to be making decisions for the right reasons and applying technology and solutions for the right reason. There's that great documentary that's getting a lot of attention lately, The Social Dilemma. I think it's available on Netflix and others.
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's phenomenal for introducing people to the impact and effect of social media in terms of society. And the important question that it poses is, well, do you fix this? How do you fix this? What do you fix? And it's a case of going, there's both great good and terribly bad things that happen as a result of the capability that's presented in those environments. And it now becomes the onus on people to make the right decisions for the right reasons in this space. And that goes towards the principles for technologists, the folks that build systems and leverage these things and do things with these. It's not just your technical skill anymore, but it's your moral fiber, it's your ethical reference framework that you bring to what you do and build and how you do that, that becomes such an important shaping factor in terms of what we will deliver and how we deliver those things.
Yeah.
And ultimately, how we'll all be measured when those things are out there and used. It's, did you do this for the right reason? Not could you do it? Because I think that question's almost gone away from technology. Can you do it? Absolutely. Enough time and enough people, enough smart brains, we can do absolutely anything you want us to. Mm. It becomes critically important to be asking that question of should you do those things?
Well, while we're on the subject of social media and elections, how do you think the not just the Trump campaign, but the Biden campaign used social media in the US, and are there learnings from that as well? I know that South African companies tend to be a bit terrified of social media, and with good reason, because we can see how things can blow up very quickly. I mean, we saw the situation with the Clicks Retail Group and what happened there a few months ago. And I think many companies are, you know, they see these things blow up and they think, well, thank goodness that wasn't us, but we could be next. Are there learnings, first of all, from politics as to what businesses should be doing when approaching social media, and should they be as nervous about it as they are?
Yes, 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 and yes, Duncan. Well, now you're asking all the easy questions. Come on. Let's go back to the hard ones.
Social I've got a few media, lined up, don't worry.
Always say the wrong things. The social media side of it, you can't afford not to be there. It's a channel to market. It's a channel to community. It's a channel of communication that is simply part of this millennium for us. It's the new age for the generations that come through. They're used to it, they expect it, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
The change in the dynamic in terms of what happened 2016 again versus 2020 is also worth calling out. So maybe there are some things to learn from good old Donny Boy. Not many, but some. Yeah. 2016, the behavioral science behind looking at what people liked in their social media profile is enough for you to derive political affiliation, demographic information, etc. And it's based on a minimal number of things. So you think that when you're running through social media and you like that picture of the little kitten hanging from the tree, good for you. But that plus a couple more meant the marketers have incredible insight to you as a behavioral profile. And consequently, that's then being used to market to you and position stuff in your feed and what's put in front of you every time you look at that screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those campaigns, particularly the Trump campaign, looked at that. And they had individualized campaigns to actually point to particular people in particular areas based on what that behavioral profile was. So presenting you, as example, an ad with slightly blue background because you'll be more influenced by that than if we present it to you in green. Why? Because blue is more your favorite color, so you associate with that and you would like that more and you'd be more inclined to believe that. The disinformation channels that were there as well in terms of things that don't go vote, it's dangerous to go vote, etc. The translation of that for businesses becomes a case of going, there are so many new interactions that are in front of you in terms of the experience with your client base or your community base. And it's not just about selling. It's not just about marketing the product to them. It's about hearing what they're asking for or what they're missing in your product or why they buy your product or how they feel about your product or your service or your organization. And your opportunity to engage with them means that that distance between you and the end user has now kind of disappeared. You're together. You're right there if you just listen, which also means that every time you communicate, you've got to be incredibly careful about what you communicate and how you communicate, because all of that will be judged and evaluated and it will be pulled back. And that goes towards nonsensical advertising that doesn't think through what they're positioning. And consequently, the organization winds up being shown in media for the wrong reasons. So there's certainly a lot there for business to take into consideration. There's no point in being afraid of it. It is. You need to be there. If you're not, every one of your competitors is, and they're looking to engage and they're looking to convince every other customer and everyone that buys from you to buy from them.
Yeah.
It's about how you now take that opportunity to grow those relationships and build those relationships and work those relationships into something that's lasting and meaningful and valuable, not just to you having a good customer base, but valuable to your customers as well, that they're going, wow, you listen to me. You're actually innovating in areas where I'm providing the direction because I wanted this thing to be slightly more rounded or slightly more square, and you've done that. It's so much better. I love your product. And I go and market that myself to everybody else, going, this is the greatest thing since widgets came along. You know, what else could you possibly want until, of course, Apple releases the new iPhone? Then you definitely want one of those.
It's interesting what you say about this almost one-to-one marketing at a mass scale that we're seeing through social networks. But do you think there's a danger that there's going to be consumer pushback at some stage? I mean, already in my circle of friends, I hear people saying, how on earth? I was just talking to my friend the other day about that BMW I was interested in. Now I'm getting served ads about that BMW, and I didn't even put it into a search engine. That's freaky. How did they figure that out? Do you think that at some point people are going to say, well, no, these ad tech companies have become far too powerful. They know far too much about me. I'm either going to quit these social networks, which probably won't happen, or I'm going to dial back on my use or change my privacy settings so that they don't get access.
It's all options, but the fact is those connections are there. And, you know, the fact that Siri is always listening for you to call her means Siri is actually listening to every word that you say. So when you talk about that new BMW or the fact that Audis are better, shameless plug for Audis. Audi, if you're listening, call me. But that kind of information is there and available, and it is being used all the time. So so yes, people need to be conscious about these things to kind of go, one, I'm now aware. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So once you're aware, now what do you decide to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
And you have those options. You should have those options. In some case, I think it's more the illusion of the option that you can opt out from things than you really can. But you should investigate that to kind of go, well, what am I comfortable with and what's intrusive, but what's facilitative? So there's that choice to kind of go, a balance between the two is something that's there. And that's where, again, the onus now falls on the folks that build these solutions and bring these solutions to life to have those considerations in terms of what they do, not just because they're going to be compliant with GDPR, not just because they're going to be compliant with POPIA or anything else that comes along in those veins. It has to be ethical building of solutions. And again, conscious leadership around that is going to help organizations find that direction. So yes, I think there will be pushback and there'll be response to that. But at the same time, in the past, pushback has come from odd sources. Ed Snowden, in terms of the intrusion of the US government, in terms of monitoring all communications, as opposed to what they really were authorized to do in terms of legislature. The fact that you have organizations like the Center for Humane Technology that are now pushing principles toward people and going, please read this and consider this in terms of how you function as a technologist. Those are really good signs. And the more that folks like you, Duncan, you're the answer, really, is bring this to light and get the conversation out in the public so that folks are, again, aware and then ask the questions, what are my options? Because I'm not comfortable with that. And if they aren't the options that we want, then we've got to collectively go back and go, hello, people that build these systems. Hello, people that run these systems. This needs to change. And again, that winds up being a bit of that circle between the industry that does these things and the market sectors that make money out of it, the public that consumes these things, and then our representation in terms of government that has influence in the legislation that determines the frameworks that the organizations can actually work with. It's got to be symbiotic in terms of how it eventually works. And we're all smart enough to kind of look at these things and start to be critical of them and start to ask for the outcomes that are to the benefit of everyone. That really has to be something that everyone will eventually buy into. Kind of go, it's not just about being profitable as a business. Mm-hmm. It's not just about doing everything good in a social context. There is a balance between the two. If you believe in capitalism and free market economies, cool, fantastic. If you don't, well, Vlad, I'm still not interested in being a Russian citizen, even though you want a dictatorship running around, but, you know, that's for another day.
Well, the third and fourth pillars of this discussion are mobile and cloud. So let's tackle those. Mobile, why is the discussion about mobile important in the context of South African businesses thinking about digital transformation?
Wow. Well, the adoption, particularly for us in terms of mobile adoption across the population, it's one of the fastest things that's happened anywhere, right? Almost anybody that you deal with these days probably has a smartphone of one sort or another. It used to be a bigger distribution across to the feature phone side of things, but it's now more the smartphone industry that's really out there, which means that the richness of the communication engagement that you have with those people is that much better. The opportunity for service delivery through that mechanism is now there. So having a major impact on that population in terms of what you can bring to them and what you can expose them to in the way of services, entertainment, education, it's phenomenal what can be done with that, which is why that mobile aspect is so important. Not about laying fiber everywhere anymore, because the cell phone signals will pick it up. 5G will bring in even better performance. Fantastic. But that reaches the thing. If you can get the population connected to the information and the capability, you can leverage that to raise education levels. And that's a massive enabler within Africa itself. Mm-hmm. Raise education, skill the people up in things that are relevant on a global scale. That shortage of skills that we started off talking about, that's a massive opportunity for us in South Africa and all the way through Africa to be the source of young people with the relevant skills to satisfy that global demand for capability in these areas. Mm-hmm. So that, of all things, is a major leveler for us in terms of opportunity, is the fact that you can get to those people and they can participate in the economy as well, or in that global technology economy anyway.
Yeah, no, we're definitely a mobile-first society, no doubt about that, very much more than Europe or the US or certainly developed parts of Asia. But yet I still visit some websites, South African websites, that are not optimized for mobile, and I can't read them properly because the text is scrolling off my phone and I'm going like this. It's actually amazing that companies are still developing websites, or they're probably quite old websites now, to be fair, that are not optimized. Their UI is not optimized for mobile. It's almost criminal.
Absolutely. And gee, Duncan, it's almost like we set this up between us. That there's a learning from Donnie again. How about that? If we kind of stretch this analogy just a little bit, and people have to forgive this one, it's quite a long stretch, but stay with us, right? If you haven't left already because of my terrible voice on these things, but that's just a different complaint. If you look back to when Donnie went in 2016, the fundamental difference that has shifted people into the vote for a real person this time around is probably the experience that they've had across the last 4 years. And that's where you are, Duncan. And look at these old sites. Yeah, the person or the company has created a website. They're digital. They're there. But they haven't given consideration to that user experience. They haven't updated for what would make it a fantastic experience or actually show people the nature of the organization, make it easy for them to use. And that's where services like customer experience, user experience, so the UX and user interface side of things, is something that organizations have to pay attention to now. It's not just about, am I there on the digital channels? It's how are you there? How well do you present your organization? How easy do you make it to do business with you? How much of an amazing emotional experience is it for somebody in terms of how they interact with you? Do they see the responsiveness on your site in terms of their orders or their interaction or their request for service, whatever it may be? And it's one of those things that I agree with you 100%. Those are elements that a lot of organizations have not paid attention to. Mm-hmm. And then the question of why aren't we seeing the return on investment in terms of what we've done in these channels is something that perhaps they missed to kind of go, well, we're there, we've enabled it. Why isn't this whole community coming in? It's because the community came in, took a look, and then they left because it was horrible. They went, oh, I'll find somewhere else to go. It's not good enough. It's the same. Invest in a mobile application and you build a mobile application. In most cases, that new app that somebody downloads, they'll look at it, they'll try it once. Mm-hmm. If they don't like it, they delete it.
Yeah.
And you can think of it from your own personal experience. How many apps do you have beyond your first view on your phone that you actually use? They might be there, but they might be forgotten. And you collect a whole bunch of them and they're gone. Mm-hmm. So anybody that invests in delivering an app, boy, you have to make sure that not only that app is something that's a great idea, but it's a great experience. And that goes through everything. The visual presentation, the flow, the responsiveness, the actual outcome at the end of the day in terms of what you are enabling for your user in terms of that channel. So UX, UI, and CX, customer experience, absolutely essential considerations alongside the technology, mobile space, social space, wherever you are. That experience factor is something that you have to be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. You did mention we were stretching the analogy a little far, and I'm going to ask you to stretch it a little further still in our final pillar of this conversation. That's cloud. We don't have to bring it back to Donald Trump. I think we've spoken enough about him. What are your thoughts on cloud and South African companies and what they should be doing?
Duncan, everything comes back to Donald. You know that. Come on. He's the center of the world. That every news broadcast will tell you.
He thinks he is, yes.
Indeed. Pretty nobody else does, Donnie, but yeah, you should check that out sometime. The cloud side of things, and unfortunately, I'll have to relate it to Donnie because he's just taken over my brain for some reason. But but cloud is something that's been a major tech trend for a while, and folks have all heard that story. Go to the cloud, you'll save. It'll do great things for you. It has all these benefits. And then people do, and how many success stories have you heard? Probably not nearly enough for you to go, wow, I should do that. And that's where, again, Donnie comes into it. All these promises of what would happen and how great it would be, whatever it was. And it hasn't been delivered. And you can see the same thing happening in cloud adoption as well. Folks are going there. But the only way that you make it successful is you understand it's not simply about going, I used to run everything myself, and now I drop it into the cloud and it's better. It's not. You need to be looking at things like the modernization of your apps and moving them into the right architectural structures so that you can actually leverage the benefits of cloud. You're able to ramp up small components and downgrade certain other components in terms of your use of infrastructure in cloud in order to actually get the economic benefit out of that infrastructural change that you make. That's one of the things that we talk to clients about a lot is app modernization, app migration. Those things need to be considered together. Mm. You have to do those things in order to actually get the return on investment from cloud. Do we believe in cloud? Absolutely. That it's where you need to be. The responsiveness and the enablement that it brings to you in terms of building new product, being agile, being flexible, being responsive, being able to do all these things, doing little experiments with technology. You have so much more opportunity to do so on the cloud platforms. You have to be there, particularly if you're going to be a digital business. That investigation, that technical view of things, that ability to kind of go, I want to try these new things on a small scale. If they work, I can ramp them up. That's exactly what you want to be doing. And you don't want to be sitting with all the tin and all the work behind the scenes in order to make that possible. So be there.
Yeah.
But behind that, make sure that you have the understanding in terms of what you've got to do with your applications in order for that to work. And second of all, it's not a fire and forget type situation where you kind of go, well, I moved to the cloud and everything will be fine. Yeah, not so much. It's something that has to be managed. It's something that you have to have people looking at, managing, monitoring, maintaining in terms of optimization for your needs. So think of it simply as a light bulb for a moment. We'll really simplify it. It's something that Donnie wouldn't get, but everyone else will. If you walk into a room and you turn on the light bulb, that's great. The light bulb burns and it's bright and it's wonderful. If you leave the room and the light is still burning, well, the lifespan of that light bulb will reduce. Why didn't you turn it off when you didn't need it and you weren't in the room? And the same thing goes with cloud. You should be managing your resources and the capability that's in there so that when you're not using it, you turn it down to almost zero. Don't incur the cost when you don't need to. Ramp it up in the right places and have that control over it. So again, all that comes down to is make sure that the apps and the movement of the apps into that space, the modernization process has been applied to this so that it's possible to get the benefit. Then second of all, manage your cloud implementation so that you are turning it on and off and scaling it up and down as you need to in order to reap the benefits out of it. But don't be left behind. You need to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right, Carl, this has been a fascinating discussion. I think, let me stretch that analogy one final time. We've got U.S. President-elect, or he will be U.S. President Joe Biden coming in on the 20th of January next year. There's going to be a lot of change in politics, certainly in the U.S. next year, and on the global stage. But I'm imagining post-COVID, hopefully 2021 is post-COVID and post-lockdowns, I imagine there's going to be quite a change in the conversations that you're having with your clients. What do you expect next year? How are your conversations with corporate South Africa going to be different to the conversations you were having in 2019 and 2020?
Well, I think everybody this year has experienced an extraordinary year, and hopefully they've all turned inward to go, primary responsibility is look after your people, look after your communities, look after your country, and look after the world. The moral of the whole story is we're all in this together. You can't get away from it. It's maybe one of the best things about COVID is maybe that will be a realization across the world. We're all in this together. So let's do what's best for all of us. In terms of organizations that we deal with, both here and abroad, I think we're already starting to see green shoots in some of that, of people responding to the fact that lockdown in some places has been reduced, and folks, particularly like in South Africa, are driving hard to try and get the recovery on the economy side of things. And we have a role to play in that, and so do they. And mentioned early on, some clients are even taking that to the extent of going, how do I benefit the communities closest to home first, where I know I can have an impact? And those types of conversations, I think, are going to lead to slightly different dimensions in terms of our conversations with customers. Mm-hmm. There's going to be more in the way of how do we collaborate to the benefit of what you're trying to achieve as a business and what you're trying to achieve in the way of community benefits. That becomes a new important dimension, both from an organizational point of view and from the evaluation point of view of the communities out there that then look back at these organizations and go, well, you're a successful business. How are you translating that success into benefit for the communities around you? And that's something that we will probably pay even more attention to as business within South Africa and beyond. Outside of that, do I think organizations are going to invest more heavily in technology? Yes, it's a great risk mitigation against a similar occurrence of what we saw in the past. If you didn't have online presence, effectively during level 5 and level 4, you were shut out from your customers. There was very little that you had in the way of opportunity to deal with them. Mm. So zero transactions, zero revenue, that puts you under enormous strain. The reduction in terms of transaction volumes just in retail it's amazing that our big retailers actually got through that period and are slowly, hopefully, finding their feet again. They're big employers in the country, and we all want to see them succeed and come back to life in terms of where they are, because they do a lot of good for our economy and the people that work for them. Fantastic. So I think lots of organizations are going to look very carefully at what they experienced this last year and go, digital isn't just something that I need to talk about. It's something that I have to have a plan for, and I have to be proactive about it. I can't wait for there to be the next pandemic or the next disaster. And if we're going to be pessimistic, I think we're all going to be in that boat of going, we expect that to happen again in the future. It just is something that it's happened, it will come again. And next time round, let's be better prepared and better prepared to do the right things in the right time frame in order to mitigate some of that effect. We don't want to see people lose jobs. We don't want to see people in health conditions that we're not ready to help them deal with. That all has to be part of our thinking and where we're going with this stuff. Is be prepared, understand how tech can help business, but how it can also help people. Early warning indications in terms of where infection pieces might be taking place or hotspots, so that we can get early into those things. Track and trace type situations that need to be as effective as possible so that we can isolate, quarantine, treat, and then mitigate against the spread of things like COVID-19 and others. So tech is going to play a big part of that. And again, linking it with my first bit, sorry for waffling on,
Not
is
at all, not at
that
all.
organizations, thanks, Duncan, you're very kind. Organizations are going to be thinking more about their role within the communities, their responsibilities in terms of being ethical, thought leading, and benefiting organizations so that they are actually doing the right things, not just within their sphere of business, but within their sphere, within the societies that they work.
Carl Fisher is MD of DVT's Coastal Region. He's also the company's CMO, and he is Executive Head of AI and Data. Carl, thanks for a fascinating discussion, and thanks for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Well, pleasure, Duncan. Thank you so much for the opportunity.